TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness.
Project for the New American Century.
You are about to hear the second of a two-part reading of an extraordinary document by the Project for the New American Century, no less than a blueprint for U.S. military world rule. In part one, the need for the U.S. to fight and win multiple large-scale wars and to maintain police forces across the globe was spelled out. In order to convince the American public to support these policies, the authors say that a new Pearl Harbor would be needed to speed up the transformation of the U.S. military into a global strike force. A year after the document was written, the events of 9/11 became that catastrophic and catalyzing event. Today's reading begins with a reference to Pearl Harbor.
You are listening to excerpts from Rebuilding America's Defenses, Strategy, Forces, and Resources for a New Century, produced by the Project for the New American Century. Creating Tomorrow's Dominant Force. To preserve American military preeminence in the coming decades, the Department of Defense must move more aggressively to experiment with new technologies and operational concepts and seek to exploit the emerging revolution in military affairs. Information technologies in particular are becoming more prevalent and significant components of modern military systems. These information technologies are having the same kind of transforming effects on military affairs as they are having in the larger world. The effects of military transformation will have profound implications for how wars are fought, what kinds of weapons will dominate the battlefield, and, inevitably, which nations enjoy military preeminence. The United States enjoys every prospect of leading this transformation. Indeed, it was the improvement in capabilities acquired during the American defense buildup of the 1980s that hinted at and then confirmed during Operation Desert Storm that a revolution in military affairs was at hand. Further, the process of transformation, even if it brings revolutionary change, is likely to be a long one, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. In general, to maintain American military preeminence that is consistent with the requirements of a strategy of American global leadership, tomorrow's U.S. armed forces must meet two new missions. Global missile defenses, a network against limited strikes capable of protecting the United States, its allies, and forward deployed forces, must be constructed. This must be a layered system of land, sea, air and space-based components. Control of space and cyberspace, much as control of the high seas and the protection of international commerce defined global powers in the past, so will control of the new international commons be a key to world power in the future. An America incapable of protecting its interests or that of its allies in space or the infosphere will find it difficult to exert global political leadership. Missile defenses. Effective ballistic missile defenses will be the central element in the exercise of American power and the projection of U.S. military forces abroad. Without it, weak states operating small arsenals of crude ballistic missiles armed with basic nuclear warheads or other weapons of mass destruction will be in a strong position to deter the United States from using conventional force, no matter the technological or other advantages we may enjoy, even if such enemies are merely able to threaten American allies rather than the United States homeland itself, America's ability to project power will be deeply compromised. Creating a system of global missile defenses is but the first task of transformation. The need to reshape U.S. conventional forces is almost as pressing. For although American armed forces possess capabilities and enjoy advantages that far surpass those of even our richest and closest allies, let alone our declared and potential enemies. The combination of technological and strategic change that marks the new century places these advantages at risk. Today's U.S. conventional forces are masters of a mature paradigm of warfare marked by the dominance of armored vehicles, aircraft carriers, and especially manned tactical aircraft that is beginning to be overtaken by a new paradigm marked by long-range precision strikes and the proliferation of missile technologies. Ever since the Persian Gulf War of 1991, when an Iraqi Scud missile hit the Saudi warehouse in which American soldiers were sleeping, causing the largest single number of casualties in the war, when Israeli and Saudi citizens donned gas masks in nightly terror of Scud attacks, the value of the ballistic missile has been clear to America's adversaries. When their missiles are tipped with warheads carrying nuclear, biological, or chemical weapons, even weak regional powers have a credible deterrent, regardless of the balance of conventional forces. That is why, according to the CIA, a number of regimes, North Korea, Iraq, Iran, Libya, and Syria, quote, already have or are developing ballistic missiles, unquote, that could threaten U.S. allies and forces abroad. To increase their effectiveness, ground-based interceptors like the Army's Theater High Altitude Area Defense System must be networked to space-based systems, space and cyberspace. No system of missile defenses can be fully effective without placing sensors and weapons in space. Although this would appear to be creating a potential new theater of warfare, in fact, space has been militarized for the better part of four decades. Weather, communications, navigation, and reconnaissance satellites are increasingly essential elements in American military power. Indeed, U.S. armed forces are uniquely dependent upon space. As the 1996 Joint Strategy Review, a precursor to the 1997 Quadrennial Defense Review, concluded, quote, space is already inextricably linked to military operations on land, on the sea, and in the air, unquote. The report of the National Defense Panel agreed. Unrestricted use of space has become a major strategic interest of the United States. As exemplified by the global positioning satellite, space has become a new international commons where commercial and security interests are intertwined. Many of these commercial space systems have direct military applications, including information from global positioning system constellations and better than 1 meter resolution imaging satellites. Indeed, 95% of current U.S. military communications are carried over commercial circuits, including commercial communications satellites. Space control is not an avoidable issue. It is not an optional extra. For U.S. armed forces to continue to assert military preeminence, control of space defined by the Space Command as access to space, freedom of operations within the space medium, and an ability to deny others the use of space must be an essential element of our military strategy. Yet, it will not merely be enough to protect friendly commercial uses of space. As Space Command also recognizes, the United States must also have the capability to deny America's adversaries the use of commercial space platforms for military purposes in times of crisis and conflicts. As outlined by Space Command, carrying out this program would include a mix of reusable and expendable launch vehicles and vehicles that can operate within space, including space tugs to deploy, reconstitute, replenish, refurbish, augment, and sustain space systems. But over the long term, maintaining control of space will inevitably require the application of force both in space and from space. cyberspace or net war. If outer space represents an emerging medium of warfare, then cyberspace, and in particular the Internet, holds similar promise and threat. As with space, access to and use of cyberspace and the Internet are emerging elements in global commerce, politics, and power. Any nation wishing to assert itself globally must take account of this new global commons. The Internet is also playing an increasingly important role in warfare and human political conflict. From the early use of the Internet by Zapatista insurgents in Mexico to the war in Kosovo, communication by computer has added a new dimension to warfare. Moreover, the use of the Internet to spread computer viruses reveals how easy it can be to disrupt the normal functioning of commercial and even military computer networks. Any nation which cannot assure the free and secure access of its citizens to these systems will sacrifice an element of its sovereignty and its power. It is clear that for the U.S. armed forces to remain preeminent and avoid an Achilles heel in the exercise of its power, they must be sure that these potential future forms of warfare favor America, just as today's air, land, and sea warfare reflect United States military dominance. You are listening to excerpts from Rebuilding America's Defenses, Strategy, Forces, and Resources for a New Century, produced by the Project for the New American Century, Transforming U.S. Conventional Forces. Much has been written in recent years about the need to transform the conventional armed forces of the United States to take advantage of the revolution in military affairs. The process of transformation within the Defense Department has yet to bear serious fruit. The two visions of transformation promulgated by the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Joint Vision 2010 and the Joint Vision 2020, have been broad statements of principles and of commitment to transformation, but very little change can be seen in the acquisition of new weapons systems. The process of transformation has yet to be linked to the strategic tasks necessary to maintain American military dominance. New classes of sensors, commercial and military, on land, on and under sea, in the air, and in space, will be linked together in dense networks that can be rapidly configured and reconfigured to provide future commanders with an unprecedented understanding of the battlefield. Ballistic and cruise missiles and long-range unmanned aerial vehicles, UAVs, will make it much easier to project military power around the globe. Munitions themselves will become increasingly accurate, while new methods of attack, electronic, non-lethal, biological, will be more widely available. In time, the art of warfare on air, land, and sea will be vastly different than it is today, and combat likely will take place in new dimensions in space, cyberspace, and perhaps the world of microbes. Air warfare may no longer be fought by pilots manning tactical fighter aircraft sweeping the skies of opposing fighters, but a regime dominated by long-range, stealthy, unmanned craft. On land, the clash of massive combined arms, armored forces may be replaced by the dashes of much lighter, stealthier, and information-intensive forces augmented by fleets of robots, some small enough to fit in the soldiers' pockets. Control of the sea could be largely determined not by the fleets of surface combatants and aircraft carriers, but from land and space-based systems, forcing navies to maneuver and fight underwater. Space itself will become a theater of war, as nations gain access to space capabilities and come to rely on them. Information systems will become an important focus of attack, particularly for U.S. enemies seeking to short-circuit sophisticated American forces. And advanced forms of biological warfare that can target specific genotypes may transform biological warfare from the realm of terror to a politically useful tool. While the exact scope and nature of such change is a matter for experimentation, Army studies already suggest that it will be dramatic. Consider the potential changes that might affect the infantrymen. Future soldiers may operate in encapsulated, climate-controlled, fighting suits laced with sensors and boasting chameleon-like active camouflage. Skin patch pharmaceuticals help regulate fears, focus, concentration, and enhance endurance and strength. A display mounted on the soldier's helmet permits a comprehensive view of the battlefield, in effect, to look around corners and over hills, and allows the soldier to access the entire combat information and intelligence system while filtering incoming data to prevent overload. Individual weapons are more lethal, and the soldier's ability to call for highly precise and reliable indirect fires, not only from Army systems, but those of other services, allows each individual to have great influence over huge spaces. Under the Land Warrior Program, some Army experts envision a squad of 7 soldiers able to dominate an area the size of the Gettysburg battlefield, where in 1863, some 165,000 men fought. Global strikes from air and space. The rapidly growing ability of the U.S. Air Force to conduct precision strikes over increasingly greater range marks a significant change in the nature of high-technology warfare. From the Gulf War through the air war for Kosovo, the sophistication of Air Force precision bombing continued to grow. As the relative value of electronic systems and precision munitions increases, the need for advanced manned aircraft appears to be lessening. Moreover, as the importance of East Asia grows in U.S. military strategy, the requirements for range and endurance may outweigh traditional measures of aircraft performance. In particular, the Air Force's emphasis on traditional, tactical air operations is handicapping the nation's ability to maintain and extend its dominance in space. The Air Force should target significant new investments towards creating capabilities for operating in space, including inexpensive launch vehicles, new satellites, and trans-atmospheric vehicles, in preparation for a decision as to whether space warfare is sufficiently different from combat within Earth's atmosphere so as to require a separate space service. The price of American preeminence. As admitted above, calculating the exact price of armed forces capable of maintaining American military preeminence today and extending it into the future requires more detailed analysis than this broad study can provide. We believe it is necessary to increase slightly the personal strength of U.S. forces. Many of the missions associated with patrolling the expanding American security perimeter are manpower intensive, and planning for major theater wars must include the ability for politically decisive campaigns, including extended post-combat stability operations. Also, this expanding perimeter argues strongly for new overseas bases and forward operating locations to facilitate American political and military operations around the world. In Europe, the Persian Gulf and East Asia, enduring U.S. security interests argue forcefully for an enduring American military presence. There should be a strong strategic synergy between U.S. forces overseas and in a reinforcing posture. Units operating abroad are an indication of American geopolitical interests and leadership, provide significant military power to shape events, and in wartime create the conditions for victory when reinforced. Conversely, maintaining the ability to deliver an unquestioned knockout punch through the rapid introduction of stateside units will increase the shaping power of forces operating overseas and the vitality of our alliances. In sum, we see an enduring need for large-scale American forces. But while arguing for improvements in today's armed services and force posture, we are unwilling to sacrifice the ability to maintain preeminence in the long term. If the United States is to maintain its preeminence, and the military revolution now underway is already an American-led revolution, the Pentagon must begin in earnest to transform U.S. military forces. The program we advocate, one that would provide America with forces to meet the strategic demands of the world's sole superpower, requires budget levels to be increased from 3.5% to 3.8% of the GDP. A sensible plan would add $15 billion to $20 billion to total defense spending annually through the Future Years Defense Program. This would result in a defense top-line increase of $75 billion to $100 billion over that period, a small percentage of the $700 billion on-budget surplus now projected for that same period. We believe that the new president should commit to a plan to achieve that level of spending within 4 years. Only such a force posture, service structure, and level of defense spending will provide America and its leaders with a variety of forces to meet the strategic demands of the world's sole superpower. Keeping the American peace requires the U.S. military to undertake a broad array of missions. There can be no retreat from these missions without compromising American leadership and the benevolent order it secures. This is the choice we face. It is not a choice between preeminence today and preeminence tomorrow. Global leadership is not something exercised at our leisure. When the mood strikes us, or when our core national security interests are directly threatened, then it is already too late. Rather, it is a choice whether or not to maintain American military preeminence, to secure American geopolitical leadership, and to preserve the American peace.
You heard excerpts from a document by the Project for the New American Century. The reader was Meme Troop founder R.G. Davis. Written in 2000, the document by the Project for the New American Century amounts to no less than a blueprint for U.S. military world rule. It was commissioned by Richard Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, and others. The 75-page document remained secret until it was discovered in September 2002. And here is a postscript from the viewpoint of August 2016. As media and public are trying to find an explanation of the aggressive militarism that pervades the presidential campaigns, judge for yourself how important the influence of neoconservatives and their programmatic text by the Project for the New American Century remains. In 2006, when it became increasingly clear that the Iraq War had become a foreign policy disaster, PNAC was replaced with a foreign policy initiative, also founded by William Crystal and Robert Kagan. However, the neoconservative policies did not change. 8 years later, writing in the May 26, 2014 issue of the liberal New Republic, PNAC co-founder Robert Kagan published what some observers saw as an update of PNAC, an essay entitled "Superpowers Don't Get to Reach Higher, What Our Tired Country Still Owes the World." The media saw it as a critique of President Obama, whose foreign policy was not aggressive enough for the self-proclaimed liberal interventionists, a term Kagan now prefers, as opposed to neocon. One might ask, how much more intervention could Kagan be calling for, given that the overthrow of Gaddafi in Libya and regime change in Syria, that Obama had begun by supplying arms to anti-government militias in Syria, were clearly stated goals in PNAC's governing document. When Hillary Clinton became Secretary of State, she brought PNAC co-founder Robert Kagan on as an advisor after he had previously worked for presidential candidate John McCain. And as mentioned in part one, Clinton appointed Kagan's wife, Victoria Nuland, as her spokesperson, despite Nuland having served as a top aide to Iraq war hawk Vice President Richard Cheney. Nuland then proceeded with regime change in Ukraine, an anti-Russian move that also fits into the Cold War extension strategies of PNAC. Robert Kagan is now endorsing Hillary Clinton as president. One might say the biggest gift Obama provided to Kagan and the neoconservatives behind PNAC, as well, of course, to President Bush, Cheney, and Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, was what many call his presidential pardon of war criminals. As will be remembered, Obama announced upon taking office that rather than examining those behind the false information that gave the Bush administration an excuse to invade Iraq, that the U.S. would look forward, not backward. Even the Nobel Committee that had awarded the president its prestigious Peace Prize on the basis of his opposition to the war in Iraq must have been stunned by that. Thanks to broadcaster Jeffrey Blankford for providing material for this postscript. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. TUC Radio is free and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation keeps this program on the air. Go to TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening.